Hi, I'm Jackie Graham, one of the co-founders of Art on the Ave NYC. Welcome to our first episode of the Art on the Ave NYC podcast series. Coming up, you're going to hear a great conversation about art as a tool for community regeneration. This podcast is produced by Mouth Media Network and made possible through the generosity of IDB Bank. We've asked a few consultants and business leaders to have a conversation about how we can use art to do just that. With us are Ziv Byron, President and CEO of IDB Bank, Nicole Painter, Executive Director of the Columbus Avenue Business Improvement District, Daniel Anderson, Director of 4th Street Cultural Consulting, and Asher Remy Toledo, Founder and Director of Hyphen Hub. Asher, you're a cultural consultant and producer of artistic events, and you've spent your career promoting artists and creating immersive experiences that reinvigorate spaces. Clearly, you understand the power that art can have in creating positive change. In your experience, how can art make a difference? Why are initiatives like Art on the Ave and No Longer Empty worth doing?
Well, in this case, we live in New York and we love our city. And we want the city to continue, and we moved here because we, like in my case, I moved here 30 years ago because I love the energy, I love the creativity. So initiatives like Art on the Avenue is they are crucial for this moment. You know, where you are turning something that is a bad thing, seizing it as an opportunity to create change and create a new future. And also, the Upper West Side is such a vibrant neighborhood, one of the most densely populated and more, you know, in the city, and also one of the most, that had the most cultural institutions in it. So definitely, you know, it's the right, has the fertile ground for it.
Definitely. And No Longer Empty, can you tell us a little bit about what you've been doing for the last 12 years?
Yes, No Longer Empty. I was one of the two original founders of the group, together with Manon Sloan. And then I was at the time living in China. When I came back, it was the recession, 2008. So I had a conversation with Manon, just, friends getting together, catching up. And she was telling me about all the empty spaces that were happening in the city. And I just told her, I just saw an amazing exhibition in an empty police building in Hong Kong about the architecture biennial, and it really changed my mind. I thought it was very socially impacting. So we actually started, why don't we do that here in New York? So we started exploring, asking landlords to give us a space, and everybody was, why should I give you a space for free? So there's, and then after a few months of this happening, we got the first space, and from there we continued. We thought about just doing one exhibition, and then, of course, thinking about site-specific exhibition. But the first one, which happened to be at the Chelsea Hotel, it was so successful that then the organization took off. And from there, we developed newer and newer projects, new initiatives, education aspect, and all this, you know, social engagement. And the organization just closed, recently, a few months ago. I was only with the No Longer Empty for the first 3 years. And then I left to do other things, but I continue engaged with them and suggesting artists for the different exhibitions and so on.
So you find that once you get your feet off the ground with these kinds of initiatives, people recognize their value and the value that art has to regenerate spaces, and they tend to gain momentum?
Yes, I mean, that was our case. So the beginning was a little bit hard, as I mentioned, for donors to see the value of it. Because it's, but once they we managed to get the first space at the Chelsea Hotel, which at the time was kind of in a turmoil because a new buyer, a new person had bought the Chelsea Hotel and was trying to kick out some of the old tenants there, and there was really, really bad press about it. So this Manon, my co-founder partner. She met the new owner at a dinner, and this woman offered us one of the empty vacant spaces in the Chelsea Hotel. So we were very torn about it. It's like, I don't want to be part of this. This is such a bad press. And but we, since we didn't really have any other options, we just we said, okay, why don't we seize the opportunity? And what we did was to invite, because the Chelsea Hotel has so many artists there, we invited the artists living there to be part of the exhibition and to tell the story. And it's, and of course, we had a lot of people that were against us, that we were selling out, and there were also, but there were also many people that were pro us because we were allowing them of being a venue for that. So that this was pre social media, but there were all the blogs. So everybody was writing blogs and sharing things. It was all the press covered the whole mess that was happening, which it was in our very benefit, because when we did the exhibition, it was tons of people that came, tons of media, and all the landlords that had rejected us originally, they came and saw it, and they said, oh, this is what you guys were talking about. And since we were curators, we were very careful in designing the exhibition from a curatorial point of view. And that was, so they saw that it was so well done, and they said, why don't you come and we'll give you Tower Records building. Or the related also, they offered us the Caledonia building, which they have said before, no, not to us. And from there, everything started. Yeah.
Nice. Well, here's hoping that's what happens with Art on the App. You mentioned giving artists a chance to tell a story, and that was our motivation as well, especially given the somewhat dismal environment that was New York in early June, when we first conceived of the idea. Using art to bring hope and optimism seemed like a step in the right direction, but it was really just an idea at that point. And then the kind of how we were going to bring everything into play became the issue. Turning over to Dan, you are the how, aren't you? Your company, Fourth Street, is specialized in placemaking and in bringing different elements of a project together so that these ideas can be implemented. What is it about Art on the App that made you think this was possible and worth pursuing?
Yeah, I mean, I think you touched on it, which is what I always liked about Art on the App was the story that lay behind it. I mean, it seems like a really straightforward idea, doesn't it? You've got empty shop units. They're sitting there not doing anything. They're a bit depressing. It's a bit of a blight on the neighborhood. Why wouldn't you put some art in the shop window? I mean, it sounds really obvious, but you know, I think as Asher touched on just now, it's deceptively simple, because actually getting it off the ground is remarkably difficult and complicated, and it requires, as I'm sure you've discovered over the past few months, it requires a certain amount of stubbornness to get something like this done. And I think the reason it's so difficult is, as simple as it seems, you're kind of operating in three different worlds. So think about what you need to do a project like this. You need the art and the connection to the artists. You need the properties. So you need to get the landlords on side, and you need the money to get it all done. So you're actually working in the art world, you're working in real estate, and you're working in finance. And these are not worlds that, other than a podcast like this, naturally intersect on a daily basis. And whenever you're trying to bridge these different worlds, things get remarkably complicated. But you know, just to be brief and to answer your question, why did I think it was possible in this case? It's because lying behind all of that complexity was this very simple, slightly romantic, very compelling story about three teachers who are trying to get to grips with these very big epic events that we lived through over the past summer. How do we help our students come to terms with it? It's everything you just said, so I won't repeat the whole history. But I just remember thinking the first time I heard that story, you know what, if you just keep telling that story in the way that you're telling it, whether it's to an artist or to a banker or to a sponsor or to a landlord, they'll get it. And they'll want to get behind it.
Nicole, you're the executive director of the Columbus Avenue BID. Your help in bringing all the various landlords on board has been invaluable to us. I guess my question to you is why this sort of thing doesn't happen more often with empty shops. There were vacant spaces before COVID, and there will be vacant units after this is all over. Our biggest challenge has been getting the landlords to give us the space. What are the obstacles for landlords in joining something like this?
Sure. I think basically, as you were saying, that real estate is foreign to you, but the art world was pretty easy. I think sometimes landlords, the art world is a little bit foreign to them. So maybe they might think that's a good idea, but it's a big lift for them as well. And so sort of having a liaison, I guess, in a bid is a great first step, because a bid has already built those relationships with the landlords, and specifically the landlords within a district have already bought into the idea that they need to, put effort into making the neighborhood as a whole better. So with the Columbus Avenue bid in particular, a lot of my landlords are small landlords that wouldn't be able to sort of do a project on this scale, and the bid on its own wouldn't be able to do a project on this scale on its own. And so being able to explain to them that Art on the Ave sort of has all of the logistics together and sell the idea to them, but then the bid can work through a licensing agreement covering the insurance and really speaking to the risk that they feel and translating it into sort of something that they can understand, I think is the first step. But as Asher mentioned, once you have one, it sort of snowballs. So after I got a couple landlords on board that, you know, are longtime supporters of the neighborhood and the Upper West Side, I could say, oh, that landlord's doing it. Don't you want to be a part of this? And so sort of building the almost camaraderie, which is a little bit, I think, unique to the COVID pandemic, and everyone feeling like we have to do something, the buy-in is a little bit easier to get. On the other hand, the idea of the risk being bigger is there because everyone's just sort of scared. And so my goal is that a few of the landlords that weren't on board, they're still not on board. Once we have some art in the storefront and we prove what's happening and how this can help and they see it in person, maybe they'll be like, oh, wait, I do want to do that. So that's sort of the goal. It's really just explaining to them, getting on their level of what the risk is and how we can cover that, or that we've thought of it, that we know that they're scared, that we know that they want people to see the space, that we're ready to sort of tackle those or adapt to what they need is, I think, the biggest part.
Definitely. And do you think that this will, I know that you're hoping that this will snowball, yeah, and we'll get a few more landlords on board as well. And we've already seen some supporting businesses that have seen the value in it. Do you think that we'll, fingers crossed, get some more?
I think absolutely. I think once we sort of do our social media push and get some press and can really come back and say, look what's happening here. You want to be a part of this. It really is drawing people out. It is bringing energy. You don't want to miss out on this. I think it will. I'm hopeful. But even in on a broader scale, I think then if Art on the Ave wants to move to another neighborhood, say, look what we did here. You know, we could sort of have the framework now, and it will be easier to get in another neighborhood. Or if Columbus Avenue bid wants to do it again next year, we already sort of have the framework. So the first one is the hardest, but I do think that it will be like a proof of purpose that we can do it.
Definitely. And Dan, I'd just like to bring it back to you for one second. You had mentioned something in one of our past conversations about the nuance of bringing people across the street as opposed to across the city. Can you speak to that a little bit and how Art on the Ave might be something for the community?
Yeah, it's a bit of a flippant expression that we often use, which is that it's easier to get people to cross the city than it is to get people to cross the street. And what we normally mean by that is we tend to sometimes confuse our tourism agendas with our placemaking agendas. And we tend to think that all of these types of projects, their success can only be measured in terms of the number of people that visit and how much money they spend, which is very much a tourism kind of metric. And without getting too technical about it, there is a concept within tourism economics, which is the usual environment. So basically, if you're inside your usual environment, which is where you live, where you do your shopping, where you go to work, that part of the world that is part of your daily routine, that's your usual environment. And the minute you're outside of that, you're outside your usual environment, and basically you have two different frames of mind in those situations. So just imagine if you go to a foreign city where everything is unfamiliar to you, suddenly you're behaving like a tourist. Suddenly you discover your passion for museums and theater and the circus and the zoo and the aquarium, and you're very alert to everything that's around you because everything is different. But when you're in your daily routine in your own neighborhood, everything is very functional. It's hard to break people out of that routine. You know, you leave your house and you go to the grocery store and you're making lists in your head and you got to get to the dry cleaner before it closes. And you're very tunnel visioned and you're less alert to what's happening around you. And I think the value of projects like this, when they're done by the community for the community and they're operating very much at that community scale, is it just shakes people out of that daily routine. And, you know, it's this moment of surprise and delight, and it just gets you to stop in your tracks and think about the world and think about your neighborhood and your community and your place in it.
Yeah, thank you for explaining that. That's exactly what we hope Art on the App will do. Asher?
Can I add something? I was also involved in the Liverpool Biennial in 2010, and I was actually invited by the director of the Biennial at the time, Louis Biggs. He told me, you know, what you guys are doing in New York, No Longer Empty, is perfect for us. We've been in recession for the last 6 decades. We have plenty of empty spaces. Why don't you come and curate a project for the Biennial? So I remember I went, and I went to the opening of the Biennial, the time that it was happening, but he wanted me to work in the next one. So, and I remember I just went the day of the opening. I went and got a haircut right there in the center of Liverpool. And the barber who was a scouse, he was asking me, where are you visiting from? And I was telling him, and he said, I'm coming here for the Biennial. He said, what is the Biennial? And it's the Art Biennial. It's been around for 12 years. He said, I never heard of it. So I just looked back and he said, you see those banners right there in front? That's the Biennial. Like, oh, that's what that is about. So I was very curious about it. And I told Louis Biggs, So that night I said, why don't you come with me to the opening night? I have my VIP card is for two people. It was at the Tate Liverpool. And he's like, I've never been to the Tate. So I was like, come with me. When do you close? He said, 6. He said, okay, let me put up a beer, then we go there. And he was there like a kid in a candy store. And everybody was asking me, who's your guest? And he said, my barber. And everybody was shocked, you know, in the art world, you brought your barber. So that's... But it totally transformed, like we pretty much went through that direction. I said, you know, I want to focus on the people who live in Liverpool, not, you know, the international group of people that come to Liverpool just for a day or two. They come on Saturday morning from London, maybe stay overnight or not, take the train back at night, and they just, you know, so, which is kind of what the Biennial was focusing on. But they never focused really on the people there, which were like very working class scouses, and they always felt very alienated from the Biennial. So, and my section was super, super successful because it was, even though of course it was for the international crowd as well, but because I came from the traditional No Longer Empty of a specific science installation, so I thought like, how do I make this size specific for Liverpool? And so I took the idea of music and sound, which the city was very connected with. So what we did is at Tower Records, we did an exhibition with close to 100 artists that all did projects that were related to music, from the downfall of music, transformation, everything. And I invited one of the artists, leading artists of the exhibition who had recreated a store. When you enter, it looked like Tower Records was back. And that was one of the successes of the exhibition, because many people were saying, you know, writers, bloggers, so were saying, it took me 20 minutes to find out that this was an art exhibition. I thought Tower Records was back. But so I brought that artist to Liverpool and we recreated a store there. But what we did was very different. We had a stage, and since Liverpool has so many musicians from all over the world, we recorded every musician, invited them to come and perform. And we had a vinyl cutter. Gave them a record. We kept one in our bin. So what it was different is that in England, so I worked with the establishment and also the anti-establishment. People who work on the underground music clubs, all the artists that always felt disenfranchised from the Biennial. So that was one of the key successes of that exhibition, for example.
That's wonderful. That's a great story. And that's exactly what Art on the Ab is trying to do, is be accessible to our immediate community. And at every stage, as we were going through it, we really expected a major obstacle. But somehow, everyone has just been supportive and have been advising us and encouraging. And we realized that people were not only listening to us and to our idea, but that now it was actually coming into effect. But at that point, we needed funding to be able to make it happen. So Ziv, as president and CEO of IDB Bank, you must get approached about donations all the time. What was it about Art on the Ave that made you say yes? What was different about this initiative that made you come on board?
So, you know, we at IDB Bank take pride on being a relationship bank. And we've been serving commercial banking and private banking clients for over 7 decades. And for us, relationship with clients, it's not just the client themselves. It's the clients and the communities where they and us work and operate. And when we saw this fantastic initiative, we got excited. And we got excited because we believe in the power of art to drive change. And when you demonstrate, when you present art in the public, you invite people, whether they come from the same neighborhood or from different areas, they come, they interact with the art, they interact with each other, they interact with businesses in the neighborhood. They talk about it, they go home and they share the experience with friends and family members. And I think it can truly change the perception of a neighborhood. And it was very clear to us, as you presented it to me and many of my colleagues in the first time, that we want to take part. This is our way to help change communities and help drive the relationship we have with these communities. And I'll add a point you asked earlier about the landlords. You know, imagine, and retail has been in a decline for the past few years as we spend much more online than in brick and mortar stores. And it is a challenge. And the landlords, as well as the small businesses, obviously are affected by it. But I think, you know, if you think about walking down a street where every second store is empty versus, you know, it's a depressing experience. Whereas if you walk by a street where you feel like you're walking on a street full of galleries, it's a completely different impression. And I believe that once landlords that didn't participate or don't participate in this round, they will see that. And this is the real value. Because when people will come back to the neighborhood, yeah, they might consider opening their next business or the next store in the neighborhood, or they come back and do more business there. So I truly believe in the power of art to drive change. And at IDB, we're very excited about taking part in this fantastic initiative.
Thank you. And we could not thank you enough for all of the support that you've given us. And you put that so well. Art does have the power to drive change. And it does invite people. If it's there and it's street level, it invites people to interact. They talk to each other, they talk to their family, and they will hopefully be interacting with our supporting businesses as well that have our Art on the Ave logo there in the windows. Asher, back to you. It seems that there is a lot more involved here than just art in the windows. What do all of these financial and operational challenges mean for art and the artists? There will be some who say that this is just using art in the service of real estate. So how do we make sure that this ultimately benefits the artists and the local community?
Well, I think this is it's an initiative that if we bring everybody on board is a win situation for everyone. You know, the landlord is benefiting because of the space is getting showcased and shown in a better light, is being visited by a lot more people. They could send potential tenants to see it without having to make an appointment with a broker. It does. So there are many things. And the artists, besides the visibility, which is really is not that important because artists are many other ways. They don't have to do all this work and not get paid, which is one of the unfairness of the things, you know. So but they get to engage and show, you know, the work that's, and the other thing is the community. Community is so important because you always need to think about the stakeholders, depending where you are going to the exhibition. For example, with No Longer Empty, you know, they did one of the last exhibitions. It was at a former police building in the Bronx. And I was not with the group by that time, but I was involved by helping select some of the artists. And that was when had a very bad name because they were actually working very closely with the landlord who wanted to convert this old police building into luxury apartments in the South Bronx. So, and the group didn't consult with the community or with the stakeholders. So they just wanted kind of to impose these. And it, so there were these articles around really bad press. Is South Bronx the next Brooklyn? Are the artists the honey to the bee? They are, is, are they being used for, you know, for these purposes to just gentrify the neighborhood? So it's so that totally backfired and there were protests from all the neighbors and everything. So that was when you, I think when you are involved in a specific project, you need to, if you have some good intentions, just be sincere. Don't be, because the group also, they organize a, like an open house for brokers, you know, where the exhibition was happening. So that absolutely backfired against the group. So that's just one of the things that you just, if everybody's on board, just figure out who are the people that are most affected. And then the second layer, that's my advice.
You know, we are very well aware and aren't on the app of the different constituents that are participating with us and kind of how we need to benefit all of them, including and perhaps most importantly, the artists. And so a big part of our initiative was that they would be getting 100% of all sales they make and hopefully get a lot more exposure than they normally would. So I think we'll wrap it up there. I just want to thank all of you guys for joining us today. It has been a wonderful conversation and I look forward to seeing you all on the app.